Hello and welcome to Techsplaining. I'm here with Rob and Mark, and Stephanie's being a slacker this evening. So how are you, Mark and Rob?
I didn't say she was being a slacker. I said
that's nothing. What I heard. That's what I mean. Before I clicked record, I should have started recording earlier.
No. She's taking a much needed staycation today. Our kids have a spring break, so we're allowing her to. I think she's taking her family to see Ready Player One. So it's a good excuse. Yeah.
Very good. So Mark, you've been at Washington D.C. for SharePoint Fest. How was that?
Yeah, so I was there, what was it, last week? Or again, my weeks all tend to blend together. Was it last week?
I think it was last week.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so SharePoint Fest DC. SharePoint Fest does a few SharePoint conferences around the country. They do Seattle and Chicago and DC. And they switched to a 5-day format this year. So it's a full week of SharePoint, 2 days of workshops, and 3 days of sessions. So it was I had a workshop every day and a session every day, or a workshop for the first 2 days and sessions for the next 3 days. So it was a pretty busy week, and I had a good time. I came up with some neat thoughts and some ideas I wanted to talk to you guys about and get your feedback on. But that's just a little teaser. I'm not going to say too much at the moment, right? This is our intro. What are you, Brett? What's going on and what's new with you? What have you been up to? Didn't you just come back from someplace interesting?
Yes. I've come back from vacation. So I missed SharePoint Fest DC. We were there as a company. Hopefully my boys behaved themselves. And hopefully no you comment. Saw them. No comment. Okay. So you redheads keep it in the family, right?
Yeah. Strawberry blonde, thank you very much.
Strawberry blonde, okay. So So I was in South Africa. We visited Johannesburg with the kids. Went to see my uncle and aunt and a lot of wildlife. So yeah, it's a pretty cool time.
Did you get to see any lions eating?
We had the opportunity to see the lions eating, and we decided that it might not be for the kids.
I saw that. I saw the lions eat in there at the lion park in South Africa one time, and it's not for the kids, actually.
So I was disappointed, but also didn't want to scare my kids to death. So we left 2 minutes before the lions were about to be fed, and those lions knew they were about to be fed.
They were
pacing up and down. Yeah.
They do. And there was a group of teenagers, I guess, from like New York or somewhere up in the Northeast U.S. And while the lions were eating, they pretty much all started crying. Like, they couldn't believe it. It freaked them out so bad.
Snowflakes.
Yeah. I was like, you know, it's a circle of life. I mean, this is how things happen, right? I mean, you know, this is like,
I heard those Springboks were tasty.
I have had Springbok. They are really good, actually. Yeah, that's a kind of a local deer. That's it's really awesome.
So big green egg Springbok.
Yes, on a breed. No, it's good. I mean, it's a beautiful country, though. I really enjoyed my time in South Africa, and I hope you guys did too. It looks like from your pictures and your post, it looks like you guys had a fantastic time.
Yeah, it was really, really good. Yeah, enjoyed every minute of it. It was fantastic.
I've never been to Africa.
What have you been up to, Rob?
Well, I was actually last week I was on spring break as well with my kids and wife who's a teacher, and but before that, actually the weekend before spring break, I did it was one of the Ragnar series relay races, which is they do them all around the US. They're starting to expand into Europe. But this one was called Ragnar, Tennessee, which is in my state, and it was a 200-mile relay race. So we went 37 hours nonstop. It took us about that long to run 200 miles.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It was so much fun. I mean, there's no sleep. It's just great.
200 miles.
Yeah. So how much of that do you actually physically run?
About 26 miles or so.
26. Okay, so you do a marathon, right?
But, yeah.
Is it broken up?
It is. You get three legs, so you run, like three times. So there's two vans of 12 people. Two vans of six people each, so a total of 12 people on a team. And you basically one van of six people starts, and then all six people run. Then you hand a baton to the next van, and they all six of those run. Then you run, and they run, kind of back and forth until you hit Nashville.
Cool.
Yeah, but they've got a nice route. It's very well organized. All of the local communities are happy to see us running through. And, you know, they look at us strange, obviously, but but it's fun. I mean, it's just a great, this is my fourth one. So it's a lot of fun.
I've got to change your definition of fun. So come to Arkansas and you don't have to run a mile and I'll show you, show you fun.
Well, it was, I was hoping my wife would be into it because she likes to exercise as well. But I knew when I was taking like a baby wipe bath in a middle school bathroom that this was not for her. Not for her.
And then when the principal caught you in there and they kicked you out, that's a whole other story, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, no. it was good. There were about 3,000 runners, though. It was a big race. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. Next time you come over and we'll do it.
Yeah. Or you come to Arkansas and we'll go 200 miles on four-wheelers.
Okay. Yes, that sounds like a lot of fun as well.
That sounds more like it. That sounds more like it. I wish I had your vehicle in South Africa, actually. The 1-liter four-cylinder Toyota Corolla that we rented wasn't really a match for those roads around the safari.
Yeah. Actually, did you see I think it was this week with the in Kruger National Park. Did you see where that poacher got eaten?
No. I think I heard about that.
Didn't. Yeah, there was a poacher because I looked at it. And I was like, I wonder if that was the Lion Park, but it was actually in the big national park there, the kind of the wild game park.
Kruger is the biggest one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess some poacher was out there looking for lions, and he was out at the wrong time, and they found him. They ate him. Karma is at its best, right there.
Absolutely.
He doesn't have the guts to do that again.
Yeah. <Ba-dum>.
Very cool. So all right, so you were saying, Mark, that you've learned lots of new things from DC since you were the only one working last week.
No, I would say I learned new things, but you know, in the past year, we've been doing a really big push in all of our conversations and the content we're seeing around teams and around modern and around when it comes to development around the SharePoint framework. And there's just so much momentum going that way. And a lot of organizations are moving to Office 365 and really taking advantage of all the cool things you get with modern. And on my blog, I used to blog a lot about some simple solutions you could put in SharePoint by just writing some client-side script and placing it in a page on a content editor web part, and you get some really cool functionality, things like tabbed web parts and content sliders and little responsive tiles for application links. So a lot of cool functionality you can do easily. But with this push to modern, I've really been drinking that Kool-Aid a little bit, to be honest, right? Just kind of, this is where things are going. This is what we need to look at. Here's the cool things you can do with it. And I go and do this conference in DC, and believe it or not, I'm actually pretty well known in the DC area when it comes to government workers in SharePoint.
Mark, you're known everywhere.
Oh no, let's not everywhere, but there's a specific reason, except for, you know, my name being on the most wanted list. The fact is that all these government agencies, they have their SharePoint environment shut way down, right? You can't deploy any custom solution. It's all on premises. And the only way they've been able to get solutions on their environment is to do script injection with a content editor web part or script editor web part. So a lot of these guys find their way to my blog because I've got all these solutions on there. And they're like, you know, thank you so much for this. This has really saved our butts and this stuff's great. And, you know, when asking people and polling people, there's such a huge percentage of people, specifically in the DC area, that's still how they get all their work done, is SharePoint 2013 on-prem. No hopes of upgrading anytime soon, no access to the server, no SharePoint framework, and they still like live and breathe for these solutions that give them the functionality that they have no other option to get otherwise.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I've said this before, but the vast majority of our customer base is still SharePoint 2013. I mean, SharePoint 2013 accounted for more than 3/4 of our sales last year. The products obviously that we supply for SharePoint 2013. We see Office 365 really ramping up now, but that's not where the majority of the sales are. And SharePoint 2016, you can count them on each hand, the number of sales we've had for each product.
Yeah, and so it's like, you know, really that kind of really stuck with me that there are all these people out there that are not going to the cloud at any point in the future, that modern is just not an option for them. And so it convicted me, right? It made me feel like, you know, I'm not, these people are not getting served and they have real needs. And so, I've actually gone back to one of my old blog posts. I have a blog post that allows you to put your web parts on a SharePoint page into tabs, into jQuery UI tabs. And it's probably by far my most downloaded post. I mean, we're in the many tens of thousands of downloads of people using it. In fact, I have people ping me on Facebook all the time and say, I was at a client site today and I saw hillbilly tabs all over the place. And it's like, so people are out there using this stuff. And it's like, you know what? I saw people commenting on it. They're asking for feature updates and requests to it. So I sucked it up this week and I decided to go ahead and update this blog post and this script and this stuff. So I'm actually putting up a new blog post. It'll be out by the time we publish this podcast. That will be an updated version of my putting the tabs into web parts. They call it hillbilly tabs because I'm from Arkansas. I'm a hillbilly, right? And
I got it.
Add new features for that. Things people have been requesting. They've been asking for some features. So I'm gonna update that and put it out there. And I'm gonna try to do a better job about taking care of those people who don't have options of going to those new and better things, because there's a big population. So that's what I learned for the past week.
Cool. I think that's very interesting. You know, because it, I mean, it's very telling to what people are actually doing with the, you know, with SharePoint. I mean, in the fact that a lot of people, to Brett's point, we're seeing a lot of ramp up into SharePoint Online, but there's a huge population of people that are not going to go anytime soon. I wonder if they'll even upgrade to SharePoint 2016 anytime soon, right? I mean, they're obviously going to have to due to product support and things like that,
yep.
The timelines on that. But still, I mean, there's still a huge, massive market on the on-premises side. And it's 2018, right? And I did not expect to be having this conversation in 2018 at all. I mean, I know we've been kind of going down the journey, all of us as just SharePoint professionals and Office 365 professionals, right? Is for a while now, that for years, I would say 5 years, right? We've been on this journey to the cloud, and companies just aren't moving at this point to the rate that I would have expected.
Yeah, some are and some aren't. I mean, I came across an interesting one today with a client. They have they're using one of our SharePoint hosted add-ins, and one of the problems that they're facing is they've got thousands of sites where they want to use this SharePoint hosted add-in, and they've gone through, tested it in their non-production environments and everything. They've pushed it out to production, and it's not working because they have to whitelist every single app domain in the environment, and they don't want to whitelist, you know, asterisk.sharepoint.com. So I think in some respects, it's better for big corps to maybe hold back a little bit on some of this tech and not move forward as fast as some of the other firms. I mean, it's a difficult situation.
I mean, we're running into some of that now, right? I mean, we've got a lot of folks that are making decisions in pocket. Well, not in, I don't want to say in pockets, but without full understanding of kind of what that means, of what the impacts to their decisions mean. And I'll give you an example. Things like Flow and Power Apps have actually been blacklisted at my company. So we don't have it turned on. It's just completely off because as an example with Flow, right? You have so many connectors and things that you could connect to. You know, some of those are approved by the firm, some of those are not. You know, there's a lot of tools that aren't, but there's, you know, I think 100, I was looking today, it's like 176 or so connectors that you can do, and each connector has different events, right? So if you're connecting to Outlook, you can respond, you can have it do something when you receive an email, or you can have it do something when a new item is added to a SharePoint list or whatever, right? But there's 176 of those. Some of those are Office 365, but the majority of them are, you know, Google Drive and events happening in Asana and what are all these other products. And, you know, obviously you have to have accounts in those, in those products, but to be able to leverage that, but it doesn't, it's really difficult for security folks to understand that, you know, there's an advantage to using Flow. But the disadvantage that they see is that there's so many things you can do with Flow. How do you even begin to test that and make sure that all of the things that it can do are secure? So we're just turning it off, which on that decision, I think, is probably the right decision for now. I see a lot of things we can actually use Flow for, but for now, I'm cool with it. But what happens is that when you're in, say, a SharePoint modern site, right, one of the, you know, the modern list, you know, you can get a modern list, there's a Flow and there's a Power Apps tab on there. When you click on that Flow tab, I don't, as far as I'm aware, there's not a way to turn that off. But when you click on that Flow tab, it takes you to Flow and it says, oh, sorry, your company has not allowed you to do this, right? So the user experience is really bad because you get an error when you try to do something that you think might be available to you.
I wonder if you can remove that with an extension in a SharePoint framework. Extension.
I'm sure you could. I'm sure you can. But I mean, just think about how prolific that would have to be across. Oh, yeah. I mean, every site that's created, and that's across teams, that's across everything, right? So I mean, it's going to have to be extremely prolific and invasive to turn that off or hide it or whatever, right?
I'll send you a statement of work, and we'll get that done for you.
I don't want that. I want to turn on Flow. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, so I think, you know, from a lot of the things that we're seeing, there's a huge advantage to the cloud, right? But the knee jerk reaction that typically happens in very large enterprises is that, oh, we don't understand that, and there's a lot of things here that you can do that we don't understand yet, so let's just turn it off. And that can have very much downstream impacts to it. And I think, you know, because of things like that, there's so many of those things. That was just one example, right? There's hundreds of those things that you can name. I think it's scared a lot of companies from moving to the cloud, right? And some companies just can't because you've got regulatory issues and, you know, what it could be, data residency issues and all of that. But I think for us, it's you know, kind of, we're having to provide a subset of everything that 365 can do.
Well, it makes your job harder. I mean, it's you've got that much more you have to stay on top of. It's when new things roll out, you got to make sure that you get it turned off before somebody starts using it, and they start using it in a business critical way, and then it does make our jobs harder, though, from that standpoint.
Well, you know, another example is connectors in Teams, right? I mean, we're taking the option of blacklisting connectors. So when a connector is enabled, we have to, you know, that tool, say we're enabling, I don't know, you know, Jira or something like that. You know, that tool needs to go through a proper security review and make sure it's vetted. And, you know, do we have somebody to support it, blah, blah, blah. And then once that's approved, we can, you know, enable the connector into Teams. But those connectors are evolving at a rapid pace. And I think for us right now, it's working because there's a subset of those that we actually need and we're able to turn on. But as these things ramp up, there's 150 of them or so now, compared to Slack, which has about 750. As those ramp up into the 750, I mean, I really don't want to be always behind the curve of, you know, oh, there's a new one out. Let's check what's new. And, you know, because it could change on a daily basis, right, at this point. Yeah.
Well, screw security. Who needs it?
I have a love-hate relationship with those folks, for sure.
I mean, it's not so much not wanting to use certain technologies as well. It's using the right technology. I mean, getting people to use Teams over SharePoint sites or vice versa. Yeah, you might have okayed Teams inside your environment or inside your organization, but obviously, organizations have systems in place, and I think there's a bit of confusion as to, well, which is the right tool, what should I be using, and people going off and using a mix match of different products when actually the company requires you to use this one.
No, that's right. And the whole thing with these connectors is that if a connector shows up in that list of things that you can use, does that mean that the firm has approved it? Right. So does it mean that, okay, because I see Jira now in my connectors list, does that mean it's been vetted and approved and you know, kind of signed off or not? And that's kind of why we peeled those back, was we didn't want to give the impression to our people that, hey, these 150 tools that you have access to connect to have all been signed off and they're good when they're not. And that was kind of the crux of it. Of that decision. Yeah.
Very cool. So yeah, I think we as a vendor, we have a lot of organizations. Like I say, probably the majority of them are those SharePoint on-premises customers. But you have also the companies that are way ahead and adopting every single new technology that comes out in Office 365. And that's a real difficult balance for us, because obviously we're having to maintain a lot of the full trust solutions and so on, as well as get up to speed for all of our other products and migrate them over to SPFX. I mean, yeah, we wouldn't have that app domain problem if we'd upgraded everything yet to the SharePoint framework. Mm. But these things don't happen overnight. They can't. So
I wonder if these companies that are rolling out all of the tools as fast as they can, I wonder if it'd be fun to work there or not. I keep telling myself no, but
well, it depends, right? So in the SMB market, we have small companies who've never had the option to go for all of these enterprise tools. And so for suddenly them to have all this huge toolbox for all these tools they can use, it's exciting for them. And they're really excited to try these tools out and see what happens. And if you can find the right company that is okay with things, I'm sorry, Rob's picture is frozen and I can't, it's making it hard to, it's hard to concentrate. but no, if you're one of these companies who are like, change is good, you like to play with stuff and see what it's like, it's a really exciting time, because it's allows you access to tools that you've never had access to before and options you never had access to before. And so I can see how for some larger organizations, if people start going wild on these tools, it creates havoc and it creates a mess. But there also is companies out there that they're small enough and they're agile enough and they accept the risk of turning these things on, that they get to get all the value from it. And they get to really see people taking it ways they've never even imagined and creating, efficiencies all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think it's companies where everybody involved, every stakeholder is on the same page, because when you get parts of the organization wanting to adopt all the new technology immediately, but then maybe security teams saying, well, hang on a second, you can't do that. that's where the problems start.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Welcome back, Rob.
Hey, sorry. I guess my internet connection rebooted.
you had a perfect face though. it froze with you like this.
Did it. Yeah, and I'm trying to talk and concentrate, and I just have this face of Rob, like,
sorry. Oh, nice. Got a video. Hey, so it sounds like, just kind of changing subjects, it sounds like actually somebody's trying to use Zencastr again. I saw that on your Facebook post, Mark.
Well, yeah. So when we first started the podcast, we were using a tool called Zencastr, and it actually worked. When it worked well. It did some mm-hmm. things like creating some separate audio streams for us. And if you listen to our first few podcasts, so if you haven't listened to those, go back and listen to them. Those are recorded with Zencastr. But we started having issues with it. It seems to be pretty common issues with people dropping streams and syncs being off. And we lost some of the best content we ever said out loud. We lost, and you guys will never know what it was. I said some really wise things.
Prolific.
Yes. Things that would be engraved in stone if you could hear them. So we moved to Zoom is the tool we're using now for our podcasting. And so there's a whole conversation on Facebook about this.
I like this, actually. So Zencastr, we couldn't see each other, right? So I feel like we talked over each other more because we couldn't see, you couldn't wave your hand or whatever when you want to say something. So I actually like this Zoom feature better.
Yeah, the audio quality is great. AC and CJ with the Microsoft Cloud Show, they use Zoom as well. So several people I know are using it.
So going back to the SharePoint Pod Show days, I recall, we're talking, 12 years ago when we started that? And we had the Zoom recorders, which we still use at events and so on to do interviews and what have you. But the way we used to do it was we would record locally, and Rob was doing all the syncing afterwards. So we literally did a countdown at the start of every pod show. And I recall several times I was on my cell phone, sat in my car with a Zoom recorder, because that's the only place where I'd get a good sort of audio quality. No echo or anything like that.
No, it was, I mean, I think the podcasting stuff has come a long way. So I'm really pleased to see it. And what I really want to do is as Skype starts merging into Teams, there's a lot of things that Skype, I think, can offer us that I would like to see us do. And things like the facial recognition, maybe we can publish videos and with the facial recognition. But the key thing is that Skype is going to provide the ability to transcribe. Yeah. So it will transcribe the thing, so we can get automatic show notes, which Stephanie has been diligently publishing or not.
I'm sure she's doing that right now.
She's probably working on that right now. Show notes. That's a running joke with the show, by the way, is Stephanie's always doing show notes.
How many show notes do we have to date?
None. We don't have any, so that's the joke.
We can't do show notes now. We've got to keep this going. That's a problem, no. Right? We can never do show notes.
No, but we've always got to say that Stephanie's always working on them, right? Right, so right. Yeah, but I think you know, from a podcasting perspective, I'm really excited about the Skype merge into Teams, because I think for us, I think it's going to be able to provide us another medium to record the show. And I think from what I've seen of it, it looks really, really nice and rich.
Well, the I don't know if you've used Teams meetings yet, but the audio quality is just amazing. It's so much better than Skype for Business.
Yeah.
I think that Microsoft, we might need to edit this part out, but I wonder if Microsoft actually goes through and makes Skype and Skype for Business crappier so that you go to the new technologies. So I remember like regular Skype used to be like the best by far audio conferencing tool I had for doing one-on-one calls, and it has progressively gotten worse and worse. And so I think they're doing it on purpose so that I go to the other technologies.
I think it's just really crappy technology, honestly. And no offense to those Teams or anything like that, but I just think it's, you know, I think the people in the engineering side of Skype are looking forward to that move as well.
There he goes again.
And there we lost Rob again. See, so he starts talking bad about Microsoft and Skype and he gets cut off. I think there's something going on here. Are you back?
Here he is.
Hey. See, that's what you get for talking bad about Microsoft.
Yeah, so as I was saying, the Skype is great. No, I mean, I think it's just legacy technology, and I think the new stuff that's in Teams is built on a new stack, and you know, it's more modern, and you don't have a lot of that legacy code that's evolved over years from, you know, back from the Link days and things before that. So I think it's going to be a good move. I really do. And I know that they've been testing, like at Ignite, if anybody listening was at the Ignite conference, in real time they were doing translations of a lot of the sessions. So you would be able to watch a session, and in real time you could see the speaker's words on the bottom of the screen, right? So that's that same technology they're going to be using to do the transcriptions of the audio calls.
It still couldn't do Hillbilly though, so it totally screwed up whenever I was trying to transcribe myself.
Oh, it didn't do Southern.
It did not do Southern.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Alexa can't do Southern either. I'll try to talk to Alexa with a Southern accent, and she can't understand a word I'm saying. So I'm like, Alexa, get me a beer.
Turn on my lights.
Turn on my lights. I mean, since we're way off topic.
Hey, there we go.
Have you seen the Saturday Night Live skit with Alexa?
No.
You've got to look up the Saturday Night Live skit with Alexa, because it's like Alexa for old people.
Oh, I've seen that.
All people talking to Alexa. It's hilarious. So Stephanie will put that in the show note, a link to that. So.
Yeah,
the
show.
I think we might need to build a skill for Alexa where Alexa does the show notes for us. How's that?
I'll get right on that.
Yeah. Actually, I can now control my oven with Alexa.
I'll be impressed when you can control the big green egg.
No. That's, I like to do that manually. That's a
How's my butt, Alexa?
Tender and firm.
Big and beautiful. Hot and sweaty.
It's a bit spicy and leaking. You better check on it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Stephanie's going to have fun with these show notes, I tell you. Yeah.
What happened? Where did we go? So on that note.
Yeah. So have you guys seen some of the new updates that came out with Teams this month? There were some pretty prolific ones, I guess you could say.
Well, I know that you've been dealing with them, so why don't you talk us through the what you found and how well it's working?
Yeah, so they're starting a lot of the kind of the merger of Skype and Teams. We were actually just talking about that. So a lot of the merger with things like Unified Presence, to where you have, you know, whatever your presence is in Skype for business will be kind of transposed into Teams. So they launched that feature, and so if you're busy on Skype, you're going to be busy in Teams. I think that's a great thing. There's they're doing a lot of the merge into the interop with the persistent chat. So your chats will kind of transpose into and flow into into Teams and Skype at the same time. So if you're using both apps, if you're chatting in Skype or you're chatting in Teams, you can get to those chats in the same way. So that launched. You can turn that on now. There's some notifications about calls, so you can see notifications, different types of notifications in your activity feed and a lot of that. So there are some things you have to do if you have Skype for Business on premises, so that you have to set it up in hybrid mode, and getting all that stuff set up is quite daunting depending on how large your Skype infrastructure is. So just, you know, if you're probably a Skype person, you're probably not listening to this call anyway, but it's something I think that's going to be interesting to watch evolve. I'm really excited about the merger of that. Now, one of the biggest features I think that's going to impact our listeners is the guest access. So they rolled out the ability to add anybody as a guest to Microsoft Teams. So that's a huge thing, because before you had to have at least a Microsoft account in Office 365. So your account physically had to live in an Azure AD instance, and now you can open it up to basically anybody with an email.
Oh, wow. Well, that's huge. I didn't know that about that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's good. They've got new languages. They've got Indonesian, Romanian, and Vietnamese dropped. That's kind of cool. You can add more channels per team. I don't know why you would want a ton of channels in a team, but now you can create up to 200 channels, which is awesome. There's a lot of the things that I think are going to be great around retention policies. And this is really helping you stay compliant with different types of regulations and regulatory obligations that you may have on your company. I know we have a ton of those. So you can apply these retention policies to Teams now, whereas before you had to apply them to the group and to SharePoint and to, you know, whatever else. Now they actually have retention policies for Teams, which is, I think, is awesome. I know there's a lot of roadmap stuff that's happening around this. It's very basic at this time, but it's really evolving fast. So I'm happy to see that come on. One of the cool things I think is that's kind of goofy, but I thought that it would have been here by now, but you can now install Teams using an MSI. So you can, for those doing automated builds of laptops and stuff like that, you can remotely deploy it and a lot of that. So, I mean, just some nice little things that they're adding here, here and there. It's not major features. I think the guest access is probably the most major. That's a huge one, but I mean, it's evolving very fast. And I think the direction and the way and how it's evolving is coming really quick. I'm really happy to see a lot of these things coming out.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they actually added recently, I had a support desk ticket come in and go, hey, you know, I deleted a channel and all of my conversations and all my documents and everything are gone. I don't know where to, you know, how to get back to the channel and how to delete it. And one of the things that actually they added recently was the ability to restore a channel. I think it actually came in probably the last month or so, March, for the March release. It actually was a request through User Voice. I know we were talking about User Voice a few shows ago, but it was one of those, I Googled it and I was like, well, I don't know if you can do that. And then it was like, hey, somebody made the request on User Voice. It got like 400 votes. And then I noticed that the status was completed and it had been delivered. So I reached into Teams, looked at it, tested it. Sure enough, it was there. And I just reached out back out to the user going, hey, look here in this kind of deleted section. And they were able to immediately restore their channel. Now, their files actually didn't get deleted, but because it's kind of in the SharePoint site, you still have a directory there. You can go get to that. But that channel and all the conversations and all that history, they were able to get back, which I thought was awesome.
That's very cool.
Yeah. So, folks, I mean, I guess my lesson for myself here on that was, if you're trying to do something, go ahead and Google it and see if anything's been delivered, because it's I didn't know about that. I thought that the channel's been deleted, it's just gone. But sure enough, they had delivered a feature within the past, I mean, I think it was within the past 15 days when that happened.
Do you know if any of the sort of typical backup vendors are doing anything around Teams or?
Not really. Honestly, not really. I think it's such a disperse thing, right? I think the backup vendors, you're able to back up the SharePoint sites, but not really the groups or the conversations, because that reaches into Exchange. And I think they're getting there, but I just don't think the APIs are available for them to reach into and actually do things with.
Interesting.
In a whole, I guess, package, right? There are APIs for groups. There are APIs for SharePoint. But there's nothing really that pulls all that stuff together into say, you know, hey, here's a team, back up this team. Now, what does that mean? Right.
Well, and even if you can figure out how to back up the team, how in the world did you restore it? Right.
Yeah.
All those conversations. And I mean, that would
But herein lies another point of the earlier conversation about, you know, do you use a SharePoint site versus Teams? Because that surely comes into a major consideration is, you know, can I get my stuff back? Can I get these files back? should I need them? And yeah, I mean, that's critical to a lot of organizations.
So Teams, yeah, it's going to be around for a while. It's a fad, like rock and rolling cars. It's a fad. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be around. I know the market share is growing very, very quickly. I saw something, I think it was in Forbes, how it's quickly taking the enterprise collaboration market by storm.
Well, you know, and with all the tools that have come out with Office 365, sometimes you can get an inkling of like, yeah, this tool is not going to last. You can just kind of tell that they're not really pushing it. It's not going to go anywhere. I don't expect it to last. But with Teams, I mean, it just seems to keep gaining momentum, and they seem to throw more features at it. Well, and the fact that Skype for Business is rolling into it, it's obviously, they're obviously hugely invested in Teams, and it's a great platform. I like it. So I have no qualms about recommending it to people.
You know, I wish they were, and it sounds like I haven't seen any new features come out in kind of the ancillary things like that you can pull into Teams. So things like Planner, right? I think Planner's released and it does what it does, but are they evolving it? I mean, is it what it is at this point, right? Is it kind of just Planner and that's what you get? You get this task management, kind of lightweight task management tool.
Well, I mean, they've added some stuff to it, right? You now get a schedule view so you can see it in a calendar view. So they are adding to it. And I hope they keep adding to it, because that's another tool that a lot of people can get immediate access out of. That's really easy to use. So.
Yeah. There's a huge benefit to that. And it's in Office 365, and there's competing tools in the market that they may be familiar with, right? Call it Trello is an example, that I think that they can say, okay, well, let's not pay a license for Trello since we own Planner. Let's look at this as a cost savings, right? If it does very similar or the same thing, let's move over and use this.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that's kind of the benefit of those, all the apps you get in Office 365 is you can save money by not paying for other things. You know, instead of using SurveyMonkey, use Forms. Instead of using Trello, you know, use Planner. Instead of using Slack, use Teams. And those savings can add up, and you can spend it on people like me
we can go and do stuff to help you out.
So you've been listening to Techsplaining. We appreciate you guys listening to us as always. And if you have any suggestions for a show, if you have any complaints about Rob and what he does day to day, we're happy to hear those as well. You can email us at info@techsplaining.net. You can download us on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook, YouTube. We're all over the place. You should be listening to us. So thanks, everybody. Have a great day, and we'll see you next time.